The following presentation was recorded at a Christian Light Education workshop. More information at clp.org.
The title is, If Ye Know These Things, and that comes from a verse in John 13 where Jesus is talking to his disciples about the feet washing ceremony that he's just showed to them, and they are very surprised, and they're still wondering, you know, what took place here? What took place? And they really don't quite understand it because they're looking at just that symbol of it. And Jesus is trying to get across to them. He's saying, you need to be willing to be of service in other people's lives. So as you put to practice the things that you have learned today, I hope you've learned something. Are you going to put it to practice in a way that it is of service to other people? And the verse says, if ye know these things, happy are ye if ye do them. Jesus was talking to the disciples there, and he's saying, here's what I would like you to do. Here is my desire for you as I leave you and go back to my home in glory, and you're still here on the earth. Here is something that will help you in staying here until the time that you also leave this world. Happy are ye if you do these things. If you know these things, happy are ye if you do them. As we think about the subject today, ties that strengthen, things that bring strength to relationships. Some relationships we want to strengthen more than others. Partly it's because of how we get along with people. There are people that we meet, we just, oh, it doesn't go down very well. Those people are not our closest friends. And yeah, we know we have to work with them, and we're going to make do, and we're going to somehow work with this situation, but don't expect me to put forth much effort in it. As I studied for this talk, I thought of the song that we sing with the children, at least we do in our community, of when we all pull together, how happy we'll be. When your work is my work and our work is God's work. When we all pull together. I can try to do things on my own and go off on a tangent or, you know, on my own personal limb, which is a good way for it to break and go crashing down. I can go out there on that limb and I can say, I can do it by myself. Don't anybody help me. I've got it all figured out. And if you guys just stay back and stand back, then how happy we'll be. Because I'm doing it my way by myself. If any of you have tried that, I'm sure that sooner or later you found out that it is devastating. It's destructing in what's going to happen in your life. It's not going to work. So, how do we pull together? How do we get things to accomplished as we work with other people? If you look at the blurb that's in your the paper that you got today, there is four parts to the blurb that we put in there, and Elmer and I kind of decided we would use that as an outline for this talk. The first part there says, when each person knows his place. And that seems so important as we work on strengthening relationships between two people, or between this group of people and that group, or one person in a group, and you know the many things that we've talked about today. Do I know where my place is at? Is it very plain and very clear? And am I staying within those lines that God has assigned to me? Do I see the need for clear lines of responsibility, or, oh, somebody will do it? I've heard that when Elmer gives this talk, he talks about that poem, you know, somebody said it ought to be done, and but nobody did it because, you know, everybody should do it, and, you know, it goes on and on like that. I've got another poem, so I left that one with him. Do I see the need for clear lines of responsibilities? Or is it just that, you know, somehow we're going to make this school system, whatever we're doing, whether we're doing homeschooling or whether we're having a church school, are we going to make that work because we know where the clear lines of responsibility are? Or is, oh, somehow it's all going to work out, and then we're disappointed when things don't get done and things don't get taken care of? Another question there on that thought. Are you content in the place where God has called you to serve? Sometimes as we think about serving in a school setting, it's tempting to look around us at jobs that other people are doing and saying, oh, that's more glamorous, that's more inspiring. That person is going out into the mission field, but I'm just this poor stay-at-home teacher that's working with students. Well, I even have some of my siblings in class, or, you know, that type of thing. And we're not quite content where we're at. We always think the grass is greener somewhere else. And it just doesn't come out quite the way we thought, and it's because we're discontent with where God has called us to serve. Norwood and I, as we have worked with the question and answer session the last week and a half, we've come up to this thing about how long. We had a question one day. It was, how long should I teach school? That kind of caught us off guard. Well, ask God for guidance in something like that, but until God has you do something else, and He'll let you know. There'll be some clear direction there if you are to do something else besides be a school teacher. But to be constantly casting around and trying to do something else and trying to go in another direction, it's not what I really don't believe that's what God has planned for your life. Are you content in the place where God has called you to serve? Maybe you think it'd be more fun to teach where your friend does. My daughter Kayla teaches in our school back home. She teaches first and second grade. And partly through the fact that sometimes when I go visit schools, she jumps in and goes with me. She's taken off days from school and did that before. She has made some friendships over the years with some people that teach school, do something similar to what she's doing in other localities. And she had this friend out in Indiana in the Goshen area that she decided to go with me one day when I was visiting that school. She partly to visit the school and partly to visit the friend. She visited, and I visited in the room, but she pretty well stayed with her friend, and I went ahead and visited the rest of the school. And later on, we're ready to leave, and Kayla and I are talking, and she says, Dad, that teacher only has first grade by itself. I've always had first and second grade. That must really be nice. And probably the temptation there is to be miserable about it because I have to teach first and second grade, and this girl that I know over here, she's only teaching first grade. You know, she's only focusing on one grade. That was the idea. And we talked about it some. I said, yeah, that would be an interesting situation and all. And I don't know that she's given it much thought since then. She probably has other friends that do that, and she may talk to them about it, but she seems to be very happy teaching where she's at. Are you content in the place where God has called you to serve? Do you thank God for that place? Now, that's part of being content, I think, but it takes it a step further where you are willing to say, I know that this may not be the most popular spot in the world for me to serve. Maybe I could have went somewhere else and done something that would have made a bigger splash. But I'm thankful I'm here. And God, I thank you for this place that I have been called to serve. Second phrase there says, when each person knows how to respond to authority over him. And that is one thing, I guess it's a pet peeve of mine as I am a minister and work with people a lot. Is watching people and how they respond to the authority in their life. Do they have respect for the authority in their life? Do they care? Do they think that the authority structures really need to be broken down and we are just all on the same level and we all have the same maturity level spiritually, and it'll all work out. And how come we have to have any type of authority system in our churches? Or usually those people know they need it in the home, but they don't want to go any farther than that. My sister was talking to a lady that came back from, her and her family came back from Central America. They've been missionaries there for many years, somewhere, I'm guessing, between 15 and 20 years. My sister asked her, she said, "What's the biggest change that you see in Anabaptist culture since you've been back?" She said, "What's different now than it was when you went away and as a missionary?" And the lady thought a little bit, didn't think long, and she said, "It's respect for authority." She said, "I see a lessening of that in our circles where we do not respect authority as we should." Are you convinced that you need authority in your life, that it's good for you? All of us tend to gravitate towards using authority. We know that authority is necessary, and we usually think that we should be in charge of that. But what about authority over us? How do we respond to that? Another question for you to think about as you think about authority in your life: do you understand that the authority in your life will not be perfect? Your ministers are not perfect. Your school board is not perfect. If you have a principal, he or she is not perfect. The parents that are in authority over you in your life, they are not perfect. And there's a tiny possibility that you as a teacher are not perfect either. Can you accept, though, the fact that that authority that's in your life possibly will make mistakes? Now, hopefully they're willing to admit them, and we work from that and go on. But just because authority in your life is not perfect, as God is perfect, isn't a reason for us to disregard it. We need that authority structure in our life. There's a poem that I'd like to read, and I don't know if any of you have been in my... I think some of you possibly have been to teacher training at some time or another, but I'm not sure. If you have, you may have heard this. I usually read it during my teacher training sessions. And it's something that's meant a lot to me as I think about the need for lines of authority in our life. It's called "The Kite and Its String." It's written by John Newton, who also wrote the song "Amazing Grace." "Once on a time, a paper kite was mounted to a wondrous height, where, giddy with its elevation, it thus expressed self-admiration. 'See how yon crowds of gazing people admire my flight above the steeple. How would they wonder if they knew all that a kite like me can do? Were I but free, I'd take a flight and pierce the clouds beyond their sight. But ah, like a poor prisoner bound, my string confines me near the ground. I'd brave the eagle's towering wing, might I but fly without a string.' It tugged and pulled while thus it spoke. To break the string, at last it broke. Deprived at once of all its stay, in vain it tried to soar away, unable its own weight to bear. It fluttered downward through the air. Unable its own course to guide, the wind soon plunged it in the tide. Ah, foolish kite, thou hadst no wing. How couldst thou fly without a string? My heart replied, 'O Lord, I see how much this kite resembles me. Forgetful that by thee I stand, impatient of thy ruling hand, how oft I've wished to break the lines thy wisdom for my lot assigns. How oft indulged a vain desire for something more or something higher. And but for grace and love divine, a fall thus dreadful had been mine.'" We understand how kites work. We understand they need that string. What happens when you pull the string on a kite? Does it come down or does it fly higher? It flies higher, doesn't it? Often, at least. There's the occasional kite wreck. Doesn't always work that way. But that's, we understand how that works. If there's a good steady wind and the kite is flying along at a certain level and you take a couple steps back and really give a pull on that string and that kite just soars, and it takes that string to do it. And it's like lines of authority, that the strings that are attached to us as we teach school, as we are on the school board, as we minister in the church, as we are parents. We realize that there are lines of authority that are holding us in place, and a desire to have those lines cut and to be on our own and to do things our own way is false hope. It's a false desire, because it will not bring you joy and happiness. It will bring you discontent. You'll be miserable. There'll be bitterness, jealousy, all sorts of things that take place there. And but for grace and love divine, a fall thus dreadful had been mine. Along with that thought, do you want people to respond to your authority the way that you respond to authority? So as we think about those lines of authority, how am I responding to them? Oh, we want everybody, we want our students to listen to us. As school board members, we want the teachers to respect us and obey what the school board says. As parents, we want the children to respond to us and respond to our authority. Do you expect that to happen if you're not respecting the authority in your life? Number three, when each person treats those under his authority with respect. Okay, we've talked quite a bit about treating, how we treat people that have authority over us, but what about the people that are in our care? Do we use respect towards our children? Do we look at them and say, yes, I'm in charge of this child. I need to see that he does this and this and this. I need to see that he's obedient, but that he also is a person with needs. And what happened this morning at his house? What's happening in his life? What's been happening in the last few weeks? Are there things happening? Is there sickness in the family? Are things happening that are causing this child to react to me in a way that I think is improper? But can I respect that child enough to get to the bottom of it and find out really what's happening in that child's life and see why they're acting the way they are, and if there is some way that I can, through respect for them, help them to understand that I do have authority over them? When we are in charge, what is our respect level towards those under us? Last point, when each person fulfills his responsibilities. We've talked about the responsibilities that we have and the need for that. But some people, it seems like that, yes, they dearly love to be in a position of authority, and they take on lots of responsibility. They do things, you know, they say, yes, yes, I'll do that. But they never get it quite done. They always, someone else is having to take up the slack and finish their projects. They get them partway done, and then, oh, somebody else is going to have to see to taking care of it. I've just run out of time. I can't do this. Maybe we need to get rid of some of the responsibility in our life if that's the case. Or maybe we need to ask for help in those situations. Is my attitude right? Am I the person in the congregation, wherever, that says, well, nobody else will do that. I guess I'll take care of it. Or when you're asked to do something, you make the person that asks you really work to get an answer out of you. Well, did you try somebody else? Could somebody else do that? If you can't find anybody else to do it, come back and ask me. Oh, I love that one. Oh, that's not a good attitude. I dislike the attitude that goes along with that response to asking you to be responsible for something. I remember as a teenager one time, I feel like I had a bit of a problem with this. Someone talked to me about it. They said, Lyndon, whenever we ask you to do something, you never just come right out and say yes. You always have to beat around the bush about it, I guess. And it's kind of a Mennonite thing, I think, that we think we're being humble doing that. And that if we just immediately say, yeah, I'll do that, that's a sign of pride. But I got past that. And I feel like I've worked on that a lot in my life, to where when someone asks me to do something, if I have a good reason to say no and it shouldn't be, then yeah, I need to say no. But if I know I'm going to do it and whatever, sure, I'll do that. I've had some people that backed up in shock a little bit when I did that, but they blinked and got over it and said, yeah, great, thank you. I hope the rest of the people that I'm asking to do things do, you know, are willing to take their responsibility as such. Another thing, am I punctual in doing my responsibilities? We had a situation several years ago where we had a teacher that enjoyed language arts and especially writing essays a lot more than the children did. But this teacher wanted the children to write essays, and they wrote a fair amount of them. And this teacher would grade the essays what I thought was pretty high standard, had a pretty high bar on how this teacher would grade the essays. It was very difficult for a child to ever get above an 85% on an essay. And some of the children said, it's not worth trying. But be that as it may, what bothered some of us parents worse, and we had to take things up with this teacher, was that they weren't getting scored on time. The essays might be handed in, and it might be 2 or 3 weeks until the essays were finally scored. And then the child would find out that it was a poor enough grade that you have to do it over again. And they thought that they were free and clear on that essay. And then it came back, and oh my, those responsibilities, they needed to be taken care of, and they need to be taken care of punctually. We've got papers to score, things to do, things to take care of. Let's do it right away. Get it out of the way. Am I jealous of my responsibilities? Okay, I've got this set of responsibilities and nobody else mess with them because they're my set and I'm jealously guarding them and I don't want anybody else to, you know, if somebody else does them, they may find that that other person is able to do them better. So I jealously guard them. Well, there's a saying that I read many years ago that I've never forgotten. It says, if you're irreplaceable, you can't be promoted. Think about that. If you're irreplaceable, you can't be promoted. We like to think that we can, you know, we've done this job over here, so maybe we'll be asked to do something more important over here. Okay, that's fine, but if you're irreplaceable back here, you can't be promoted. Another thought on that point is, am I humble enough to ask for advice? Maybe I'm trying to fulfill my responsibility to the best of my ability. I'm punctual. My attitude is right, but things are still not going well. What am I going to do? Ask. Maybe there's other people in your congregation that have went through a similar experience. There's perhaps other people that you would feel comfortable talking to that have taught school before or been on the school board before or, you know, parenting advice, all those things. Are we humble enough to ask for advice from other people? Because when we ask for advice, we're admitting that we're not doing a very, very good job. Or at least we can see in ourselves room for improvement in a certain area. So if I ask for advice, there's always the possibility I'll get some good advice and I can do this job better. Maybe the person will say, well, I really can't tell you what to do. I'm sorry that you're having an issue with it. And somehow, and just in telling other people, and be discreet with it if it involves others, but if it's your problem and you feel good about talking to somebody about it, there is something restoring about talking to somebody about the issues, the things you're having an issue with, and asking for advice. So, as we look at these 4 points, I'll just briefly say them again. When each person knows his place, when each person knows how to respond to authority over him, when each person treats those under his authority with respect, and when each person fulfills his responsibilities, then there is peace, stability, and joy. And we want that in our families, we want that in our churches, we want that in our schools. That people will be at peace amongst themselves, that they will be stable. You know, stability, it's such a wonderful thing. And children enjoy being in the presence of someone, I'll just say it like this, they enjoy being in the presence of someone unstable for a little bit. It's exciting. You never know what's going to happen next. His hand opens and something pops out of it. Oh, this is exciting. But if you do that all day long, the child doesn't know what's going to happen next. Some of them are going to be scared of you. Others are going to be undisciplined. Things are going to go downhill really fast. So it's great to have a little bit of spontaneous things once in a while. But basically what we're looking for in our education experience is stability. Where the children know that when I come to class today, I know what to expect. Now, that one, maybe the devotional time or something, I'm not quite sure what to expect there, but the rest of the day, I can count on this and this and this and this is going to take place. The teacher's going to be there. She's not all the time trying to get a substitute to take her place. There's stability there. It's there day after day after day. Now, sometimes we get in the what we call the doldrums. We've middle of February and we're so tired of winter. We need to do something exciting and something out of the ordinary. But there's stability in that, where the teacher is still in control. And okay, we're going to do something different today, but you have to behave and you have be disciplined in the way you react to this. And we're going to work together. And it's peace, stability, and joy, happiness. If you know these things, happy are ye if you do them. I just want to encourage you. We're doing a great thing in educating children for the kingdom of God. Stick with it. There's days that it's discouraging and things aren't going right. Things don't always turn out the way we think they should. But that's why we need ties that strengthen, people working together to make a good education happen.
For more free resources that support teaching and learning, visit thedocforlearning.org.